This is the Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage show by Mark Helm. Nothing Mark shares with you guarantees your success in the self-storage business. This is for informational purposes only. There are no calls to action and nothing said or implied is a call for investment money into self-storage or any other asset class. You are responsible for your success in the self-storage business or any endeavor in life. Enjoy the show. And here is Mark Helm.
A few weeks ago, I ended a three-part series on revenue strategies for self-storage in 2026. Today, let's talk about the expense line. My name's Mark Helm. I'm the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I'm the creator of the Quick Start Academy that houses the training I offer, free training such as this, and paid for courses. How to build your first self-storage facility is one of the first courses I ever made, and it's also one of the courses in the Quick Start Academy. You can find out more about it at Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage. Hit the store tab and take a look at the courses. But a couple weeks ago, we completed a three-part series on revenue strategies that I think are going to be important in 2026, given what some of our operating expenses are going to be. Now, I didn't really say this, but in reality, what we're really focused on is the net operating income. That's income minus operating expenses before debt and reserves. The value of our asset is what a ready, willing, and able buyer will pay for that net operating income stream. Now, when I ask most self-storage owners what their net NOI was last year, not many of them know it really off the top of their head. Not many of them know whether their income went up as a higher percent over their operating expenses. If your income's going up more than your operating expenses, you're creating value. If your operating expenses are going up more than your income is, your facility's losing value. So given particularly marketing expenses, insurance costs, and property taxes, which are to a large degree operating expenses we don't have much control over, we've really got to keep an eye on our NOI, and I think you'll see why in a few minutes. So I'm not going to obviously go over every line item in a P&L, profit and loss statement, and kind of go through those one by one, but I do want to touch on a few line items that I think at least we're going to be paying a lot of attention to in 2026. Now, before I talk about those line items, I want to talk about tenant retention. Much of the revenue strategies we discussed a few weeks ago in those three episodes were really all designed around maximizing income, but keeping high tenant retention. Now, we can't make a tenant stay who doesn't need storage anymore, but we can focus a lot on tenant retention and be thinking about that in all our strategic thinking and planning. And I really learned this business when I was managing office buildings. In that management company, we used to tell our property managers, you're not in the property management business, you're in the tenant retention business. And nothing illustrates this better than office. When a tenant would move out of our office buildings, we could spend $20 on the low end of $50 a square foot to refurbish that space, rebuild it for a new tenant, pay commissions, and get that cash flow going again. All that expense is below the net operating income. Now, we measured our success in the property management business by what percentage of our tenants renewed. We had an 86 to 87% renewal rate, which was fairly good for B-class office space, at least at that time. Now, thank goodness we're in storage. I don't have tenant improvements. I don't have to rebuild a 10 by 10 to put a new tenant in there. I just got to sweep it out, door maintenance, wash the walls down, clean the floor. But the longer you can keep your tenants or customers in your units, the more value each lease is that gets signed, and the less money you got to spend on marketing. So tenant retention is something you don't we don't talk a lot about, but it really has a real profound impact on your net operating income. So just as kind of background, all of the revenue strategies we discussed and what we're going to talk about today and maybe next week, tenant retention is behind all of them. But let's focus on a few line items that at least I'm going to be paying particular attention to in the year 2026. And let's start with payroll or labor costs. Fortunately, this is an area where as an owner, you can make a lot of headway. Now, for most of our facilities, in a perfect world, we want our customers interacting with a well-trained, well-selected manager or employee. I feel it improves customer service, improves the customer experience, and helps with tenant retention. It also increases the number of referrals we get. Referrals from existing customers or past customers has always been an extremely high source of our new leases. Today, it's anywhere from second sometimes to third or fourth. That means it's the third or fourth source of new leases that we sign every month. And it is the least expensive cost we will have in generating a new lease. So when I say reducing payroll or labor costs, I'm not talking about wholesale firing or necessarily turning everything into an automated facility. What I'm really talking about is employee productivity, at least for us. Now, here's what I mean by that. 12, 15 years ago, our average gross income per full-time employee was $250,000. So when I was underwriting a facility, I could look at the gross income that that facility would be bringing in. And for every $250,000, I knew we'd need probably one full-time employee. I don't know how I got tracking that metric. I try to track everything, but we did. And it really helped me determine, based on how we managed back then, how many employees I was going to need. But an interesting thing started to happen as we grew, but more particularly as technology evolved within the industry, that number started going up. So for example, when we started putting kiosks, now we don't really use kiosks that much anymore. We'll use more flat screen or pads or ways for customers to interact directly with our website, but we always have them or kiosks at our physical facilities, even when there's a manager there. And what I know noticed was that our gross income per full-time employee started going up. And as we dug deeper into the data that those kiosks and our website started giving us, we could see in each facility and in each market area what weeks of the month and what days of the week we had more transactions than in other times. And what that allowed us to do was to begin to move our employees around within a market to cover the facilities that were busy at one place but not busy at another. In other words, when I'm talking about, at least for us, keeping our eye on payroll and labor costs, what we're doing is increasing employee productivity through technology and strategic thinking and not hiring as many people. What we noticed was 5-6 years ago, we were pushing 350,000 onto 400,000 of gross income per full-time employee. Now it's well over 400,000, pushing 500,000 for us of income per full-time employee. Now, not every market we're in, we can get it $450,000 per full-time employee. If there's only one facility there, that makes it different. But productivity, employee productivity has really increased over the past decade. So as an owner, it's really critical, I think, particularly this year, if you've got employees or even boots on the ground people, to really strategically think how you're going to deploy your force of people to help manage your assets. We constantly work on this line item, especially in 2026. Now let's talk about energy costs. We noticed that our energy costs went way down when we started using LED lights. Now, a real good time to maybe impact this line item is when you're putting a new facility into service. Either you're under construction and you're making decisions about what to do and what to install, as well as if you're putting an existing facility into service. So when we're underwriting a deal, we always, or almost always, I can't think of the last time I didn't, include a number for existing facility rehab. Now, this is a lot of it's cosmetic and cleaning it up and making it look right and putting gates or fences up or paving up. But it also includes upgrading inefficient HVAC and installing LED lights and signs and on buildings if they're not LED. Now, it could also go into solar and green solutions, which I'm not going to do in this episode simply because I don't have enough time. But suffice it to say that I always look at the possibility of installing solar. Now, a lot of that depends on what part of the country I'm in, what the rules and regs are in that state, and with that particular utility provider, whether I can get credit for unused electricity generated by solar. It also is a function of what administration happens to be in the White House, what the tax incentives are, whether I'm putting carports up, canopy parking there or not. But we do look at it. At least before this current administration, there were a lot of tax benefits that we got from using solar. And you could design strategic solutions to really reducing and impacting your energy number. You know, some people will create a separate LLC that will own the tops of canopy parking where solar panels are installed and basically rent it to the facility that gets reduced operating expenses, and the owners of the separate LLC is able to sell and make money on over-generated electricity. So it literally can become a profit center. However, today, even without a lot of the tax incentives for green that we had a few years ago, with bonus depreciation and accelerated depreciation tables, which can be generated through cost segregation reports, it's never been easier to upgrade old HVAC systems into highly efficient energy systems today. A great time to do that is when you're putting a project into service. Now, there's all kinds of ways to reduce energy costs, and it's no one else's job but yours as an owner to do it and be thinking about that and have your attention on it. And let's talk about marketing. This line item. Next to insurance costs, this line item gives me the most headaches today. We're constantly tweaking, thinking, strategizing, deploying new techniques to reduce our online marketing costs today. It's critical that our facilities show up online, at least within our trade area, for customers to find us. I mean, absolutely critical. Now, I hear a lot of owners with the wave of a hand say, well, there's no way I can compete with online marketing when I've got REITs in my marketplace. They can outspend me every day of the week. So there's no way to even compete with them. If that's your attitude, I hope your facility is in our trade areas. For us as owners, this attitude is not an option today. Now, I'm not going to use this episode to go into detail about what we are doing and the successes or failures we're having with our online marketing. I'm thinking actually about doing a series kind of mid-year on this. And what I do today is different than what I did 6 months ago. So it changes. I hope you get the picture on that, like it's an evolving thing, but somebody's got to keep their eye on it. In the days of just turning the marketing over to a vendor or to your website provider or to your SEO provider and kind of hoping for the best, those days are over. Even if you're not the one doing it as an owner, you got to understand what goes on online marketing, and you've got to be able to create or see dials and levers that you can pull and turn and twist in order to adjust the marketing, whether you're doing it or whether a vendor's doing it or not. If you've got a vendor or an employee doing it, you've got to be on top of it. You've got to be able to look at Google Analytics and understand what's going on so you can have the kind of conversations you need to have with your vendors to improve it. As an owner today, you've got to always, constantly be having your eye on this line item. And I'm not talking about every quarter. We're in it every week. Now, mostly what I see is, as people underwrite deals, the majority of small owners today don't actually even put enough money in this line item or as much money as they need to. But we need to really be on top of this and keep this cost down. And yes, we have competed with REITs and outperform them in certain markets. In other markets, they outperform us. But just because a REIT or a big regional player is in your market area doesn't mean you can't outperform them on Google. You can, and we have. Now, one other thing I'd like to say on marketing, and this probably could have been said, and it may have been said, in the revenue strategies, I've learned the hard way that in a lease-up situation where we're being very aggressive and offering a lot of free rent up front to get momentum and tenants in there, that just with that comes issues. Typically, I get a lower quality tenant with a shorter stay in our facility. And very often, for a high percentage of them, as soon as the freebie burns off, they're gone. And even over and above the financial impact of a lower quality tenant comes other problems that sometimes come with lower quality tenants. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't be aggressive in your lease up in certain circumstances. I'm just saying be aware of this in your marketing and in your, as you create strategies for getting momentum. Also, understand that every problem you have today was the solution to a problem you had earlier. So many of our solutions to our problems today are going to be things we're dealing with down the road. Just be aware of that. And under certain circumstances, we still do very aggressive offerings. But we constantly keep our eye on this line item. We know how much marketing per move-in we're spending. Do you? Couple more line items. Let's talk about property taxes. For us, standard procedure is when we get an increase in an assessment, we give that to a tax consultant to advise us whether they feel they can successfully appeal it or not. Standard procedure. Now, if you're in a market where you've been there all your life and you only are in that market, or you own a lot of property in a particular market and you feel you can do the appeal, do it. We don't do it that way. We bring someone in. Now, usually the kind of companies we bring in are companies that will, their compensation is usually a percentage, around 50%, of the amount of savings that they can create for us in the first year. So in other words, if they can reduce our property taxes $10,000 over the new assessment, then they will earn a $5,000 fee for doing that. So they're not going to waste their time if they don't think they can appeal it. And what we do, standard procedure, every property, every new assessment, we give it to, no matter what it is, we give it to a company to review it, send them what they want, and they will tell us whether they think they will be successful and or how successful in an appeal. Insurance costs. Now, nothing gives me more heartburn today than insurance. Insurance is going up exponentially. We're not going to talk about strategies in this episode. I probably will have an episode next week or the week after that's nothing but insurance. But for us storage owner, it's critical to understand that climate change is causing more severe and more expensive and more numerous weather events than ever before, and no matter where we are in the country, but particularly along coast areas, but the cost along coastal areas is impacting insurance costs everywhere in the country. So insurance costs are going up exponentially. We can't control that, but there are strategies that we can use to minimize how big that increase is going to be for us, and we'll talk about that either next week or the week after. Now, here's why I'm so focused on revenue strategies and controlling operating expenses and why we're having these episodes. I want you to take a look. This came from MJ Partners out of Chicago, but I want you to take a look at this report. Actually, it's showing NOIs for the REITs, 24 and 25 NOIs. Take a look at this. We have four major REITs, quarter by quarter NOIs for Public Storage, Extra Space, CubeSmart, and NSA. What's the one thing you notice about every one of their NOIs, 24 and 25? Was your NOI up in 25 or was it down? Now think about all the pricing strategies that these guys are using that are driving the market crazy and really irritating their customer base. And look at their NOI. We need to really focus on our NOIs in 2026. The good news is you're seeing that the downtrends in their 2025 NOIs, particularly in 25, we're getting smaller and smaller. But the one advantage we have as small business owners is we can make decisions quick and pivot quick. With many of these companies, when they make a strategic decision, it's like the Titanic heading for the iceberg. It just, they got momentum, and it really takes something to make a turn and a twist. As a small owner, we don't have that. We can move on a dime if we need to. So in 2026, really keep your eye on your expense line items that you can impact. Now, there's nothing exciting about that. There's nothing glamorous about that work as an owner, but it's something we have to do. And here's my coaching. Don't turn it over to a partner. Don't turn it over to an employee. Don't turn it over to a vendor. My coaching is, it's your job, but you can make it fun. Create a game. See how much you can impact each particular line item. Maybe take one line item per quarter. Create some kind of game out of it. Make it fun and go for it. I'd also be interested in hearing your thoughts and things you have done successfully that have had a positive impact on your reducing your operating expenses in your NOI line and has not in any way affected the customer experience that your customers have interacting with your company. I'd be curious to hear that. So my name's Mark Helm. This is just my thoughts today on impacting expense line items in 2026. And I look forward to being with you next week.